Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of August, Anno Domini 2022, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
Executives from companies like Micron, Intel, HP, and Lockheed Martin witnessed the flick of Biden's pen alongside industry leaders, auto industry leaders, and other stakeholders who stood with President Joe Biden as he signed a bill injecting $52.7 billion into their industry today. They are hopeful that these new subsidies will end a persistent shortage in memory chips. It affects everything from cars, weapons, washing machines to video games. In total, the Chips and Science Act, also known as the Creating Helpful Incentives to Produce Semiconductors for America Act, authorizes up to $200 billion in subsidies for over 10 years should the U.S. decide to continue investing. The long-term vision is to shove the U.S. ahead of China and other countries in a global race to become a chip industry leader. Some chip makers have already announced long-term investments ahead of Biden signing the bill into law, including a commitment from Qualcomm to purchase $7.4 billion worth of semiconductor chips over the next 6 years from a New York factory. Micron committed even more, setting aside $40 billion to fund memory chip manufacture. Micron's investment alone would boost U.S. market share from 2% to 10%, an ample recovery that's still relatively modest when compared to the 38% market share that the U.S. used to enjoy back in 1990. In addition to federal grants, chip manufacturers are eligible for a 25% investment tax credit through the bill. For the entire industry, that's another estimated $24 billion boon on top of the $50 billion in grants. Historically, U.S. lawmakers considered corporate subsidies of such proportion to be counterintuitive to ensuring a fair free market. But lawmakers seem to think it's necessary to ward off national security risks and address global supply chain concerns by investing billions into America's chip production, much like how the European Union and China have invested in their own production. The nation is investing in the idea that finally addressing the chip shortage will make America more prosperous and less at risk of supply issues due to foreign trade complications from the Russia-Ukraine war and rising China-U.S. tensions. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is the Chips and Science Act is signed into law. And your choices are about time, could be great, terrible idea, meh, the what now, and, of course, other. So far, we have 22 votes. About time is in the lead, followed by the what now, and then everything else. And I know you're going to have more to say about this. I know.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's way overdue. I mean, yeah. Car dealerships, you go by most of them, and they're usually always full of vehicles, and they're begging people for used cars.
Right.
Just so they have something to sell.
Right. So you can head on over to our website, soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forum. First item down on the forum. Second item down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 13/22. The Chips and Science Act is signed into law. Right now, we have three posts, and you can add your posts there. And of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And yeah, look, if you're going to be in the forums and talk about this, let's put politics aside and let's talk about what this does or doesn't do for America itself.
Yeah.
Not your hope for or long for or idealized America. Let's talk about what it does for the people.
The topic.
Today.
Yeah. Stick to the topic.
Yeah, stick to the topic.
Not political views or opinions, right. Because we know, like everybody else, everybody's got, you know, a belly button, and everybody's going to have an opinion.
And they're all full of lint.
Mm-hmm.
I remember when I was a kid.
You were?
Yeah.
I thought you skipped that phase. Yeah.
All of my friends' parents were working assembly lines at Kodak or Delco or whatnot.
Yeah.
And it was tedious drudgery, and everyone hated it. And we slowly moved manufacturing overseas because other people wanted to do it.
Yep.
And we didn't. And now 20 years later, it's biting us.
I can remember back in the day when I worked at Kodak, I worked over at Powder and Solution. And there were these two ladies, and they were there. I was there for 3 years at that one particular building. And their job was to sit at this bench.
Your coffee kind of thick today?
And they literally just put a packet of developer, a packet of neutralizer, a packet of fixer, and grabbed each one of those, put it in this little box, put the seal around it, boom. And that's all they did all day long.
I did. I worked a couple summers at Kodak packing film, putting the film in the bag, putting the bag in a box, putting a label on the box, putting the box on the pallet.
Yep.
8 hours a day on trick work. So we did C shift, then B shift, then A shift, and then back to C shift.
CBA.
So sometimes it was nice. You got some weekends you'd get off of work at 8 a.m. Friday, and you didn't have to go back to work until, in essence, 4 p.m. Monday.
Right.
So you had a really long weekend.
I worked strictly C-trick because they wanted us
to. You got paid more.
Yeah. Well, they wanted us to rotate. And it was like, we had two guys that wanted to work B-trick because they were going to school during the day. And I says, fine, I'll take C-trick. I'd rather work nights than that. Management's not around. People don't bug you. And it was nice, easy shift. And you started Sunday night at 9, so you got a couple hours overtime because normally it was 11 to 7. And you finished up on Friday mornings, and it was like nobody to bug you.
Yep.
I worked in the dark packing film, so it was kind of hard to stay awake sometimes.
Yeah, I bet. But yeah, the building chips is a fairly skilled labor.
Yeah. And now there's so much, robotic assembly.
Right. But there's still a lot of work around it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have jobs for both highly educated people and people. We talk a lot about why are we talking about sending people to college when you can get a trade job without the education. Well, you'll have both of those. In this instance.
And trade jobs, you still need a lot of education, just at a trade school, not a liberal arts college.
Right.
Yeah.
You'll still need both of those things. And I think, I personally believe that, bringing more jobs to American soil is a good thing. So we'll see in the long run who's right about that. But we can only hope that this will be a very good idea. And anything that relieves some of the chip shortages. I actually just ordered another Raspberry Pi.
Which is surprising.
Yeah, Kennekit had the high-end machines in a kit that I didn't particularly care for. It's more than I need, but the choice was that or nothing. So, okay, I took that, right? So that was good. And, yeah, those are sold out now. I got mine yesterday, and that's sold out now. Let's see what.
Oh, yeah. Well, people have been starving for them for so long.
No, that's out. Holy moly. The Extreme kits? Oh, yeah, you still get the Extreme kit.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that is the one I got. Yeah, that's the one I got.
And it's gone?
No, it's there. That one's still there.
Mm-hmm. What's the projected date on that?
October 31.
October.
Oh, that's pre-order. No, mine were actually in. Mine were in.
They did that when I got mine last year.
Yeah, this there it is. This may be the one I got then. The the Canakit Extreme. It's about the right price, too. 8 gig.
And they're out of those.
No, that's here. And it says add to cart. So,
oh, okay. So
looks like you can buy it today.
What's the price on that?
$184.95.
That's cheap.
It is. It's an 8 gig kit. It comes with
the power supply and the
power supply with the switch on it. It comes with 128 gig
micro SD
card. It comes with a case. Fan. It's an aluminum case.
Yeah, but does it come with the fan?
I think it's the aluminum case, which means that it does the heat dissipation right through the case.
Because usually with the fours, you need the fan.
You need the fan, but if you've got the high-end...
Huh.
It's the self-cooling silver case with soft-touch black lid. I beg your pardon.
Ooh.
I beg your pardon all the way around.
Ooh. Pardon me.
Yes, indeed. but yeah, so that seems to be... And what's this? Oh, that's just the case. Yeah, it looks like the case does the heat dissipation.
Okay.
And honestly, with a Raspberry Pi 4, the fans you see are so small.
Yeah, they're...
That unless you're going to overclock the heck out of
They're one by ones.
Yeah. Unless you're going to overclock the heck out of it, you don't need that much heat dissipation. And aluminum is really good at dissipating heat. Yeah. So...
Well, yeah, as long as you got the heat sinks on it, which that comes with the kit that you got to put the heat sinks on.
Right. So yeah, that looks good. I'll report on it when I get it. You get the 6 foot micro HDMI to regular HDMI. You get the self cooling silver case with soft touch black lid. You get the power supply with noise filter and a switch. The 128 gig. High-speed micro SD, so you put it in the USB 3. And it's preloaded with noobs. So you've got all the operating systems.
Noob.
Okay.
That you can play with. And you get the Raspberry Pi 4.
Can you put the Ubuntu or Xubuntu on it? And
put whatever you want on it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Because
this just comes with noobs as a system that says, here's a dozen different operating systems we know about. Or put Alexa, or it'll put, you know, Kodi or whatever you want on it, or Raspberry Pi itself. You just say, I want that one, and it installs it, and you're on your way.
Well, because I've got the ARM 64 Windows version on two of my Raspberry Pis. And now that I've gotten one machine over to Xubuntu, or Ubuntu XFCE.
Which is Xubuntu.
Yeah, Xubuntu. Now I'm going to move the Raspberry Pis one at a time because they're just file servers. So all I got to do is put Xubuntu on it, set up the file share with Samba, and map the drives with Gigolo, and away I go.
Yep, Gigolo will do that. This will be a file server for me as well. So I'll just put regular Raspberry Pi OS on it. Because it doesn't matter to me. It's just going to sit in a corner, this one. It's just going to be, I'll back up. I'll use it as a mirror for my drives. I'll use it as a backup for all of my data, and I win.
That's where I'm going to now, because I've got, like I said, three Raspberry Pis. And I'll create that file list, like you said. Create that list, so when I want to go do the other two, all I have to do is run it on the other two Raspberry Pis, boom, done.
That's exactly right. What we're talking about is that there is a program called dpackage on Linux. And one of the commands you can give it is to make a list of every installed program on your machine. You can then take that list, move it to another machine, and say, see that list? Install all those programs. So you can, with just a couple of commands and a little bit of patience, because it does have to download and install all those programs.
Yeah, because the package also has what they call libraries to it, too, folks. It's just not the program.
Right.
It's other stuff that you don't see in the background that it's doing.
So depending on how fast your machine is, and in really very little time, you'll end up with a clone, essentially, of your first machine. So there's still some setup stuff you have to do, but not much, and it's pretty easy. And so there's lots of uses for that. For me, it has a twofold purpose. One is it's a simple, really simple backup for my machine.
Yeah.
If I've got all my data backed up everywhere and all of that, and then this one file is also backed up to about four places. So if that machine ever dies, I can recreate that machine or a different, you know, use a different machine, and then just bring that file in and say, yes,
there you go.
And suddenly your machine is back. You still have to log into all of your stuff, and I get all that. But once you figure out what all, if it's your desktop machine, then you're going to want all your config files as well.
Mm-hmm.
And once you figure out where all those are and start backing those up, you can put those back. I've done that more than once when I moved machines. And so it's a little hard to figure out where those config files are.
Well, that's
For example, with Thunderbird, there's a set of files that say, oh, you log into this one and this one and this one and this one. Here's the backups of all the mail and blah, blah, blah. Well, once you know what those are, you can back all those up and bring them back to the new machine, put them in the same place, and you're up and running.
That's the one thing I'm still trying to learn is, you know, once you install a program, finding out where that folder is. So, 'cause like I have to put an XML file, say, in this one particular program. I had to download it, and I was trying to find, you know, I just put the icon out the desktop and said, yeah, here it is out on the desktop. But I wanted to try to find out where all the folders are for that program, and I couldn't find it.
Often they're under a .config file. So there's a hidden directory.
They're hidden, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. On Linux, any file that starts with a period is hidden unless you specifically say, show me the hidden files.
How do you unhide them?
Well, you can do it individually by saying ls-h, and that says, show me the hidden files. Or in a window on the GUI, under view, you can say, show hidden files.
Okay.
Show me the files.
-h, though?
Exactly. -h, yeah. So if I were to, for example, say ls-h, I will see all my regular files. And
now once you...
Sorry. -a. What was I thinking?
-al is what I usually do.
Yeah, -al is show me all the files...
in alphabetical order?
In a list with details. If you leave off the L, you get them across like a regular
list. Now, how do you get into that folder to change things or add things?
CD space dot config. You just add the dot. So if I wanted to go into my dot config file, I just say CD space dot config.
First. All right. Say it's a program, say FL Digi.
Yeah.
So I just go dot for slash FL Digi, and then that would show me.
Well, if that's where it is, you need to look. So, for example, what I'm saying is a lot of the programs I use, Ristretto, Thundar, SQLite browser, Google Chrome, all of that, are inside the .config directory.
So that's what I want to see is those folder.
Right.
That
so
folder.
You say CD space .config, LS, and then you'll see the list of files that are there.
Yep.
And in my case, let's say I wanted to go in and look at the Ristretto config. I'd say, okay, now I can say CD Ristretto, and I say LS, and there's my config file.
And Archand is saying in the YouTube chat that H is human readable.
Human readable, yeah.
So
yeah,
you get K and bytes and gigs instead of bits.
So once you're in that folder, though, you have full rights to do things, add things, and everything else.
Well, it's usually. If you then, if some commands you have to say sudo.
Sudo. Well, yeah, I
right?
usually
so
use sudo.
Sometimes you have to do that. But
super user
you
dude.
You have to be the super user dude, right. So if you sudo something, you'll always have control. Some of them, and that's why you use the L. So if I say AL, I can see that the config file for Ristretto is owned by me.
Mm-hmm.
So I could go in and edit it without a problem. But in some of them, they'll be owned by the SQL user,
yeah, or the root,
whatever. So you would have to do them as sudo.
Yeah, in case folks don't know, I have officially...
He's become a convert, and you know that those are the most fanatic people. So sit back and relax. You're going to hear a lot about this.
No, I can officially say...
You've got to change your Uncle Dave music. Sit right down and you hear a tale.
Over and over again.
Yeah.
No, to getting rid of Windows off of one of my machines. Yep. And I feel that that's a big accomplishment because I was setting a goal of doing that by the end of the year, and I've already done it on one. And all I can say is it's a heck of a lot faster. And now on that one, I don't have to worry about, which I happen to have happened just a couple weeks ago on one of my other Windows machines. It did an update, and the programs I had set up a certain way were totally broken.
Yep.
They were toast, and I had to redo a number of... It's like, you know what? I'm getting tired of this BS. It's Microsoft uses me as a beta tester for their rollouts.
You and everybody else on the planet.
And Xubuntu is not that hard to get used to. You still have the little button down the lower left corner that will open up a menu. You can set up your icons any which way you want. It is so easy to use if you're familiar with Windows. Yeah, you've got to get used to a terminal window, but that's not that bad.
Well, depending on what you do, you don't.
Yeah, really. A lot of the software does... itself. I mean, even the software and updater, there's a program that you can run and say updater, and it'll go out there and automatically download all the updates. Say that fast six times.
Right.
automatically for you. So you don't even have to think about that part.
Yep. It's a very easy, very simple program. It works very much the way you're used to. And Arch Chandler also says a lot of radios can only be programmed by Windows programs.
Yeah, I ran into that with my airplane stuff. It's mostly Windows programs. So I'm going to see if Wine will work.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm trying.
Now, let me say, View 52 says, here we go again with Microsoft hating. I don't hate Microsoft.
No.
I don't. I think I am disappointed in Microsoft.
I am.
I think they can do some things extremely better than they're doing them. I think they can do them because they can afford to do them. They just don't. And that's the part that bothers me.
Well, the part that bothers me is when they sit there and they have features that are in there, they're working, they've been in there for a long time, and all of a sudden they decide to take them out.
Yeah.
Why? They don't take up that much space. They were working for folks, and they work from operating system to operating system.
And then they find it breaks something later.
Yep.
Another print nightmare bug.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you're right, Archandra. Sometimes the best tool for the job is Windows, but not always. Yeah. And sometimes it's the worst tool for the job. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you, Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Ta-da.
And you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. While I read this news item. And I didn't make it the first item this week because I got bored with it. This month's Patch Tuesday comes with fixes for the actively exploited Dog Walk zero-day vulnerability and a total of 121 flaws. 17 of the 121 vulnerabilities fixed in the update are classified as critical. as they allow remote code execution or elevation of privileges. That's right. 17 critical remote code execution or privilege elevation problems. 17. This month's Patch Tuesday fixes 2 zero-day vulnerabilities, with one being actively exploited in attacks. Microsoft classifies a vulnerability as a zero-day if it is publicly disclosed or actively exploited with no official fix available. The actively exploited zero-day vulnerability fixed today is jokingly known as Dog Walk and tracked by Microsoft as CVE-2022-34713, 34,713th vulnerability of 2022, and it's only August.
And we wonder why.
Not necessarily. When they split the CVE numbers off to other companies because one company couldn't handle them all.
Yeah. Right.
So they each gave them a block of separate numbers, so they're not sequential anymore.
Yeah. Microsoft Windows, it's called the Microsoft Windows Support Diagnostic Tool Remote Code Execution Vulnerability. Dog Walk is easier. Security researcher Imwe Rad discovered the vulnerability in January of 2020.
Ta-da!
But Microsoft decided not to fix it after deeming it to not be a security vulnerability, which now miraculously and magically it is. However, after the discovery of the Microsoft Office MSDT vulnerability, security researchers once again pushed to have Dog Walk fixed as well, which was done as part of the last update. The other zero-day vulnerability is tracked to CVE-2022-30134. The Microsoft Exchange Information Disclosure Vulnerability, which allows attackers to read targeted email messages. Microsoft says that vulnerability is publicly disclosed but has not been detected in attacks. Not been detected is not the same as not used. Mm-hmm. So several of these attacks have been around for a while, with at least one out in the wild for 2 years. Nice of Microsoft to take time out from their busy schedule to fix these. Still happy you're using Windows? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
See, that's my frustration, and it goes back to, like, Windows 7. I mean, when that came out, that version only had one SP pack, and that was very light maintenance. For the longest time, that package just ran. It didn't get bugs. It didn't need all these patches and everything else. And then we go to Windows, 8, which is a disaster, and then to 10, and now we're, experimental people. We're beta testers, essentially. And that's where my frustration comes in. It's not that I don't like Windows. I love Windows. I go back to Windows 3.0 when I first came out. We started with Paula Chapman.
Yep.
And working with that, because she worked for Microsoft, and she'd get us deals and all this other software that we could test, and we were beta testers for a long time.
Still are.
I love it.
Yeah.
And,
it's just, it's stopped being the program it was.
Yeah, and to change things just for the sake of changing them. Like, add remove programs. They had to change that name. Why? Right. Was there any particular reason? No, just to do it to change.
Yeah, Steve Gibson on Security Now has called it Microsoft's culpable negligence.
Yes.
And it feels like they've just given up.
Yeah.
They're not going to be able to make it secure. 128 patches this month, and this was a light month. There were only 85 patches.
Right, right.
And only 5 of them were zero-day remote code execution vulnerabilities.
And that's one reason Microsoft has been trying so desperately to become an online operating system.
Yeah.
Where, you're running a virtual version in the cloud.
You're renting the software.
You're renting the software, and it's running in the cloud, because then they can make fixes easily and quickly to a single image.
Yeah.
And that makes sense to them. The problem is, how fast is it going to be?
On your internet speed, yeah.
Right, right, right. So there's, how big a set of machines are they going to need in the background?
And some people don't even have internet service.
That's right. That's right. And so there are still a lot of issues to be dealt with in that. I mean, when we used virtual machines at RIT in the College of Business, if as a back-end server, they were great. But when you had people using them as front-end devices, they were not as satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't bad. I'm not saying they were bad. They just weren't as satisfactory as something on your own desktop. And that's a simple fact of life. And you know, if Microsoft wants to retain their leadership, they can't be slower. They can't be more annoying. They can't be more difficult. They can't be something you can only use when you're in an area with Wi-Fi or a cable connection.
Mm-hmm.
They have to be the ubiquitous program that all the other operating systems are. Because it isn't that hard to move to a window from Windows to a Mac or to Linux or to a Chromebook. It's just not.
Chromebook is
even
easier.
No matter how much people think it is, it's
right.
It isn't.
Well, Chromebook is nothing.
Right.
That is a no-brainer.
Right. But so Microsoft has, you know, much as they like to downplay the competition aspect, they play it up when the government says you're a monopoly, and then they play it down when they're talking to people.
Yeah.
But much as Microsoft likes to play it down, the fact is most people don't need Windows. Most people.
Yeah.
They can get along just fine with a Chromebook or a Mac.
Yeah,
or
you need a web browser, and you need an email client, and you need a photo manager.
All of which can be done on the web these days.
Yeah.
Well, any app that you have on your phone, you can run on a Chromebook.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
That's
and
right.
For the most part, they're all free. That's whether right. It's even a streaming service for your MP3 files or a radio station or anything else, it's all there.
Yep. Yeah, it's very, very hard these days to find a program you can't run, an equivalent program you can't run on a non-Windows operating system, no matter which one you get.
And
because of that, you can replace your Windows machine. Microsoft knows this, and that worries them.
Well, that's why, like we were talking before the show on that, where a lot of developers have to get their head out of the sand. Because if they're developing programs only for Windows, they're going to be left, like Kodak, in the dust. Because, mm-hmm. you know, film isn't the big thing anymore.
It's making a comeback, though.
Yeah, yeah. But the thing of it is, though, you've got to be able. Folks are going to tablets, Chromebooks, and laptops, and other operating systems like Android, Linux. You know, that's the way it's going to go. And they're doing the gaming on the tablets. It's an Android tablet or the Mac systems. Windows is slowly dying. It's like a Kodak. They've been around for a long time. But their time, I think, is coming.
You know, they used to have 98% of the market.
Yep.
Then it was 92. Now they're in the 80s somewhere.
Well, look at even school systems
right.
have moved away from Windows desktops to Chromebooks.
Yep.
They're durable. They don't get viruses. They don't get spyware. And they don't get malware. And, oh, if I want to reset them, I can do a group reconfigure for the kids that are coming in for the new school year. Wipe them out and restart them.
And in terms of a second computer, a lot of people I know at the beginning of the summer asked me about Chromebooks because they want to go on vacation.
Yeah.
And they don't want to take their main machine. All they want to do is be able to catch up on, you know, Facebook and email and mm-hmm. TikTok and all the yada yadas. And I do that whenever I go on vacation. I take a $250 laptop, not a $800 laptop.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it.
I try to remember to take my Kindle for those days at the beach when the sun's too bright and you can't see an LCD screen.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that we're finding. You know, people are buying that second machine to take on vacation and then finding that it really kind of does yep. everything they need.
We have a lot of customers in our shop where their desktop computer dies and they say, I don't really use the desktop very much. I use my iPad so much. Do I really need to replace the desktop?
Right.
Maybe not.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people are coming up with more alternatives. You go into most of the stores now, these big box stores, and what do you see? Laptops, tablets, or phones? You don't see the big boxes and the various variety of big towers and that type of thing.
I've been seeing a lot more all-in-one PCs.
Right.
Yeah, that too.
Right. So you get that big screen.
Yeah, with a laptop motherboard stuck behind it.
Right. That's exactly how it works.
Yeah.
And you can get laptops nowadays with 16 gig and everything else. So, yeah.
And they run fast.
Yep. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Doug from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Doug?
Hey, I've got two questions about an old MacBook. A friend handed me a MacBook from 2012 and said, have fun with this. She was done with it. So I installed Ubuntu, which is delightful. But my only problem with the machine is there a way to get it to recognize 5G Wi-Fi without throwing it in the garbage and starting with something else?
Connect it to a 5G cellular phone. Well, wait a minute. 5G Wi-Fi or 5G cellular?
Wi-Fi.
That's 5 gigahertz. That's not 5G.
And well, for that, you would... look,
you need a new Wi-Fi card.
Right. The card that's in there won't do 5G. It simply won't. There was no 5G when that machine came out.
Let me check the specs on it.
It's probably
only 802.11.
But you should be able to plug in a dongle.
Yeah. Is it a MacBook Pro or MacBook Air?
MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro 2012. Okay. Does it have a CD drive?
Yes.
So early 2012.
Yeah.
The late 2012s didn't.
But you should be able to plug in a 5 gigahertz dongle, Wi-Fi dongle, and theoretically, what version of Ubuntu are you using?
It's 802.11n. It should do 5 gigahertz.
Yeah, the latest LTE, is that 2104, I think it is? I don't have it in front of me.
2204, yeah.
2204. Yeah,
it should recognize it. But the other thing is
the driver for the chipset, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you should, if you've got all the latest of everything in there, Steve says it should work. So maybe you need to update some drivers. Who makes the card in that one?
Don't know.
I'm sure Linux has a way of finding out who makes the card. So.
Probably Broadcom.
Well, LSUSB usually will tell you what's in LSUSB or LSHW, I think it is.
Okay. And who makes the dongles? I mean, can you recommend a brand or two to at least shop around for?
There's a dozen that make them.
Okay.
So, yeah, let me tell you that LSHW might be the better choice here. LSHW will list your hardware. It's a pretty long list, but you should be able to find in there, you know, there's my DRAM controller, my audio controller, my thermal subsystem. So, yeah, you would find your communication controller. There it is. Mine's an Intel 8 series HECI, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, you should be able to find all that in there without a problem. In terms of the dongle, there's a dozen companies that make them, but, you know, the names you already know, Netgear, things like that. Those are the ones that...
D-Link.
Those are the ones that you should probably look to. But I would...
There should be a list on Ubuntu's website about known compatible...
Yeah.
But that 2012 has 802.11n Wi-Fi. What is that, Wi-Fi 4? So it should be able to do 2.4 gigahertz and 5 gigahertz with the right drivers.
Gotcha. Okay. Now, I already solved another problem with it, which involved running temperature. This thing was getting extremely hot up by the screen, and there's an Ubuntu app called Sensors and another one I use to allow the fans to crank up when they need to. Mm-hmm. So that's solved. But did they always run that hot?
What it probably is in a machine that old is the thermal paste drying out and not working well between the heatsink and the CPU. If you are comfortable inside the computer, You can remove the heat sink and reapply fresh thermal paste, and that can help.
Everybody opened it up, and it was no dust. I don't know how that could be, but anyway. All righty. Well, I appreciate the tip about the dongle. It sends me on the right path.
Yeah, you can TP-Link, Panda Wireless. I just typed into Google known compatible Wi-Fi dongles Ubuntu.
Gotcha. Okay. Good. This will solve a problem. It hooked up to the cable. It's fine.
Right.
Yeah. Getting everything Greenlight can offer me. But anyway. All righty. Thanks very much.
Well, you're never going to get everything Greenlight will offer you anyway. Not off of Wi-Fi. The maximum is going to be 400 megabits.
Right. No, I understand that. Not
yeah,
that,
okay.
But it's hooked up to the cable. I'm pushing like 475 at this point, and that's which is fabulous. But anywhere else in the house, it's you know waiting for a small file to download. I can go make a cup of coffee. So
yeah.
Oh, well. All righty. Thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's an issue that you'll always have when you're using a non-Mac operating system on a Mac. Apple has a lot of suppliers, and you can't always tell just from year model what's in it.
If you pull the bottom cover off, you should be able to see the Wi-Fi card, and there might be a name on it, but probably not. It might just say Apple.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. What's up, James?
Oh, hi, Nick. I have a quick question for you. On Windows 10, I have some tabs pinned to the top, and when I hover over them, the box goes down about 3 inches, and it never used to do that. Is that something new?
Yeah, that's an update. What they're doing is showing you a thumbnail of what's in that particular program or tab. So they think it's sexy and helps you.
Yeah, no big deal. I was just wondering if there was something going on. Or you know all these updates. You guys are geniuses.
Thank you. We're just playing with them all day long. That's how we know. But yeah, that's a thing that Microsoft has added because other programs added it and it was sexy and now they've got it too.
Yeah, no big deal, but I was just curious. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Have fun.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the other thing is that anytime any operating system adds a feature that's popular, everybody else adds it too.
Oh, yeah.
And that's fair that, you know.
Yeah, well, it's helpful.
It's helpful. It's useful. It's how you stay on top,
and
blah, blah, blah.
I don't begrudge them adding features, but like they've said, when they take one away that I've been using for 30 years.
Yeah. Oh, that makes me angry.
Or change the key.
Yeah. Suddenly you're hitting this keystroke that worked for 10 years, and now all of a sudden something else happened.
And Apple just did that. The older Macs were Option D to run diagnostics. Now on the new M1 Apple Silicon Macs, it's Command D.
Why?
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Why?
Why did you have to do that?
I think they do it just so they say, well, it's new and improved.
Right. We made it better.
Yeah.
By changing Option to
just
Command.
Change the name or, you know, where you used to find one thing, now they moved it over to here.
Right.
Why?
I completely understand when a company has to change a name of something because it interferes with somebody else's copyright. We've seen that more than one time over the years.
Yeah.
I get that. Absolutely get that.
That's justifiable.
But when you change something just for the sake of change, it's annoying. Now, it may well be that, you know, they did a focus group and somebody said, but the command key is always used for that stuff. And somebody said, well, yeah, it is. Yeah, we ought to change it. Yep. I don't know why Goofy started working for them, but he apparently did.
LP is supposed to be print.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you decide to make it something else and everyone's mad that they can't print their document.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That, and that's, you know, there are look and feel issues that have become standard across platforms. That's the suit that Apple lost.
Yeah.
Microsoft successfully argued that it wasn't proprietary to Microsoft. It's just to Apple. It's just the way things are done.
It was either covered by the agreement they had,
right,
and or wasn't copyrightable anyway,
right.
There was an interesting episode on Top Gear about cars that you get into any car and the gas is on the right, brake is in the middle, and the clutch is on the left, if there was a clutch.
Right.
It didn't used to be that way.
That's right.
100 years ago, every car was different. Sometimes the accelerator was on a steering column, and sometimes the brake was on your left hand. And until that standardized, and it was mostly Henry Ford and the Model T.
Yep.
Until that standardized, you could get in a car and not know how to do anything with it.
That's exactly
in fact, they did that once when they took a Model T on one of their road trips. They parked in front of a hotel for the night, handed the keys to the concierge, and the valet couldn't figure out how to start the car to go park it. So it waited right in front of the hotel for them all night long.
Yep, there you go. that happens. I have you know, my until I got married, I never owned an automatic transmission car. And people would say to me, oh, can I borrow your car? Sure, absolutely. Here you go.
Yeah.
What happened? And one guy said, I know how to drive a stick. I just can't start it. Oh, on this one, you have to have the clutch in.
Yep.
It has to be in neutral.
Yep.
You have to have your foot on the brake. Then it will start. Well, okay. That's fine.
That's what I took my driver's test on a 57 Ford, which had three on the tree.
Oh, yeah.
You tell that three on the tree. What's that mean?
And they tell you to pillow park on a hill.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they said
my father did that. He took his driving test in a Model T Ford.
Ooh.
Not a new one. He wasn't that old quite. But he got in the car and it wouldn't start. He was on a hill, so he let out the clutch. Went down, popped it into first gear. The guy's frantically writing. He said, I thought I failed right there. It turns out the guy was just said, you know, the rest of the test I didn't even care about.
Yeah.
You knew how to do that. You knew how to drive.
Well, that's the thing. I'm still a two-footed driver because for so many years, I took my test on my 57 Ford. After that, I had Volkswagen. And most of the cars up until... maybe what, 20, 25 years ago, were all, standard shift. As a matter of fact, my HHR.
Yep.
That was I ordered that stick shift because I liked stick shift.
Yeah, so do
and
I.
Since then, I've gotten to automatic, but I'm still a two-footed driver. I can't help it. It's just what I'm used to. And, one-handed driver because I'm so used to having my hand down ready to shift.
Yeah. Yeah, I drove standard until we were about to have a baby. And my wife said, you know, I may have to take your car someday in an emergency.
Yeah.
I'll get an automatic transmission, honey. Yeah. That makes sense. That for the baby, I will do whatever.
Well, I had to help friends back in the day. They were moving, and they got one of the Hertz, rental trucks.
Oh, yeah.
And he called me up and said, Dave, I need you to help me. What? We got the rental truck. Okay. Yeah, I know. I told you I'd come over and help. Yeah, but we need you to drive it. It's stick shift, and nobody knows how to drive stick.
I had a neighbor come to my door one day and say, can you drive stick? And I thought, why, because I'm old?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, why? He said, my father's car is in my driveway, and he's gone. Can you move it for me? So I can get out? Yeah, absolutely. Not a problem. But yeah, us old people know things. All right. That music tells us that you have wasted, we all have wasted an hour of our lives on this nonsense. But do not despair. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you, and a whole nother hour of sound bites right here on the Truly Great. And truly grateful to you that we are member supported, Jazz 90.1. It's the top of the hour. It's sound bites. It's member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And now we'll talk a little bit about Meta, which is Facebook and Instagram and WhatsApp and all of that nonsense. Meta, the owner of Facebook and Instagram, has been rewriting websites its users visit, letting the company follow them across the web after they click links in its apps, according to new research from an ex-Google engineer. And if there's anybody who knows about following you across the internet, it's Google. The two apps have been taking advantage of the fact that users who click on links are taken to web pages in an in-app browser, which is controlled by Facebook or Instagram, rather than sent to the user's web browser of choice, such as Safari or Firefox or Google. And the Instagram app injects the tracking code into every website shown, including when clicking on ads, enabling them to monitor all user interactions, like every button and link tapped, text selection, screenshots, as well as any form of inputs, any form inputs like passwords, addresses, credit cards. In a statement, Meta said that injecting a tracking code obeyed users' preferences on whether or not they allowed apps to follow them, and that it was only used to aggregate data before being applied for targeted advertising or measurement purposes for those who opted out of such tracking. Nothing to see here, citizen. Move along. We intentionally developed this code to honor people's ask to track choices on our platforms, a spokesrobot said. The code allows us to aggregate user data before using it for targeted advertising or measurement purposes. We do not add any pixels. Code is injected so that we can aggregate conversion events from pixels. They added for purchases made through the in-app browser. We seek user consent to save payment information for the purposes of autofill. Of course, most people who see that think they're letting their own browser set their own computer save, let their own computer save the autofill data. But why quibble? The company does not disclose to the user that it is rewriting web pages in this way. It is unclear when Facebook began injecting code to track users after clicking links. In recent years, the company has had a noisy public standoff with Apple after the latter introduced a requirement for app developers to ask permission to track users across apps. After the prompt was launched, many Facebook advertisers found themselves unable to target users on the social network, ultimately leading to $10 billion, that's billion with a B, of lost revenue and a 26% fall in the company's share price earlier this year, according to Meta. So are you still happy with Facebook and Instagram? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
And there's a sneaky exploit where the autofill data, a lot of people will, browsers will allow you to put your credit card number into autofill so you don't have to go digging for your wallet. Well, a malicious website can have a form that says, you know, first name, last name, and then 10 feet down the page, it says credit card number.
Yep.
And your browser fills in the credit card number because it's on the form.
It's on the form. Yep. You need to be much more careful than you currently are, quite frankly, when you're filling out any kind of form on any kind of website, even if you think it's not asking for your credit card information. Just the way it is these days, particularly if you use Facebook or you use Instagram or WhatsApp, particularly if you use the apps of those, you are more vulnerable than you think. So be more careful. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. What's up, Don?
Hello. I know you've talked about this on previous shows, but I didn't write it down. What's your favorite password saver for Windows? And I know you hate Windows.
No, I don't hate Windows.
No,
I
don't.
Everybody thinks that. I do not hate Windows. I am disappointed in Windows.
Yeah.
I think they can do better, and they never do.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Going to Windows 10 was not as pleasant as operating on 7.
That's exactly. Right. That's what I stated earlier, the first hour.
Yes.
The password manager I like is called EnPass, E-N-P-A-S-S.
Is that one word?
Yes.
E-N-P-A-S-S.
Yeah,
it's great.
Okay.
There are others that are also very good. LastPass, OnePass are also good. Every browser has one built in. But one of the things that I like about EnPass, and a lot of the others do it too, is it encrypts the data on your machine. It also lets you save that encrypted file out on the web somewhere, which is the part I like, because now I have one database that my laptop, my desktop, my phone, my tablet, my watch, all can...
Yeah, everything's tied to it.
...find the same set of files. So if I update on one device, it's updated on all the devices.
Mm-hmm. There's a... If you search on our website, searching posts for Password Manager, you'll see different articles that we have talked about with password managers.
Oh, good. And... tell me again the complete name of your website.
Soundbites.org, and that's bytes with a Y.
Mm-hmm. Phone bytes.
Soundbites.
Oh, sound. Okay, sorry. Soundbites. Okay. Okay, second question. And I believe you also talked about this before, but I'm more vague on it. Your favorite uninstall program for Windows?
Revo Uninstaller. And it's R-E-V-O, uninstaller, and I go for the pro version. It's like $30 for a 2-year subscription. And what that does is with Revo Pro, one, you get a lot of, you know, the updates to the program, because you can still get it for free. There is a free version, and it works great. The reason I like going to the pro version is you go in there, and if you got a bunch of different programs you want to get rid of, you can put a check mark in the various programs. So like Windows 10 installs a lot of games and other stuff and that you don't need and don't want, you know, instead of having to go through the uninstall of each one, you just click all of them, say uninstall. It'll go through and uninstall all the ones that you don't want.
Mm-hmm.
And it removes them both from the registry and from the program manager.
Okay, it sounds like in that case, Revo Uninstaller is superior to the uninstall program that comes with Windows.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Windows Uninstaller, all that does is turn off one bit that says, yeah, this program's not here anymore. Meanwhile, your registry just grew. Because Revo Uninstaller also goes into the registry and removes all the stuff there also, keeping your registry smaller, which means it runs more efficiently.
Absolutely.
We've seen registries that were 2 gigabytes in size. And can you imagine? No wonder Windows loads slowly. It's got to load a 2-gig file, and then it's got to parse that 2-gig file.
How about programs like CCleaner that allow you to go into the registry and remove keys? Are those fairly safe? And
I wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah.
Really?
It's tough. You have to hope they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're going to pick out a register key. You're going to have to know if it's safe to delete or not.
Yeah. You've got to have full knowledge of that. Unless you're a programmer, I'd say stay away from that. Revo Uninstaller, like I said, gets rid of the file manager, and it cleans out the registry, keeps the machine running nice and safe.
I'm just thinking about those added registry keys that have taken place prior to my using Revo Uninstaller.
Well, that's a Revo Uninstaller will also look for unnecessary stuff or no longer needed stuff.
Oh, will the free version do that as well?
Take a look at it. Look it over.
It doesn't do everything, no.
Right. Mm-hmm. But look at it, what it can do. It will tell you.
All right.
And you know what that versus the pro can do. And it'll offer you a course like anything else. Something free versus something you pay $30 for 2 years is going to have more features.
Absolutely. Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Once again, your information is valuable and well delivered. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Revo Uninstaller is a great program. It is a Windows-based program. Macs don't need it. Linux doesn't need it. Nothing else needs it. But Windows runs, lives and dies by its registry.
Mm-hmm.
One single file that every programmer writes to. That's a little dangerous.
Some Mac programs will leave like preference files behind when you delete the program. That's a couple of K.
Right. That's nowadays with the sizes of hard drives, that's not a big deal.
That's one thing.
If you
installed
and deleted 1,000 programs, that might be a problem.
Right.
That's one thing, though, on this program we have not done, nor will we ever do, is tell somebody how to go into the registry and delete stuff.
Right.
Because it is so dangerous that unless you know what you're really doing and have experience. And, you know, knowing what you're doing, stay out of the registry.
Yeah, I have.
Don't even go there.
I know people, my friend Dave Ballard, puts on his leather pilot's helmet and his goggles and dives into the registry on a regular basis.
Yep.
And God bless him, but not everybody does that, and not everybody knows what they're doing in there and shouldn't be in there. It's the same, it's absolutely identical to people who say, oh, what is this file? I don't know it. I'll delete it.
Yep.
System.dat.
System.dat. I don't need that. What is it? It's a huge file. I don't need it on my machine.
Yeah.
Now
it's
your machine won't
taking up so
boot.
Much space.
Right. So, if you don't know what you're looking at, take your hands off
it. And a lot of those cleaning programs will do that. They'll find large files, and then you decide if you want to delete them or not. Or they'll find duplicate files. Well, sometimes they're supposed to be duplicates because they're in different folders.
Yeah,
right. So you do need to know what you're looking at, but as close as you can get to safe is something like Revo Uninstaller. It's a very good program. Mm-hmm. CCleaner is good at the lower level things, at the maybe higher level things is the best way to put that, the simple things.
Yeah.
But you don't want to go in mucking about in the registry if you don't have to. In general, those are not the things you want to play with.
No, never go in there unless you've got some serious experience. I mean, I feel comfortable in it because, that's what we did for a living.
It was your living, exactly.
Yeah, we did that for a living, and we had to go in and make changes and this and that. So I'm very comfortable working in it. But would I tell any other, even semi-user? No.
No.
Don't want to be responsible that if you make a keystroke because you're click happy and mess up your machine.
Right.
And that's kind of the problem that Microsoft is in, is backward compatibility. Programs assume the registry. If they would stop and rewrite Windows.
Right.
With security in mind from the beginning.
Right.
Then
they'd be unbeatable.
Right. But, even these major upgrades we have, from Windows 8 to Windows 10 to, it wasn't a rewrite. They maybe changed bits of the code, but there's a lot of old NT stuff still in there from
the
20 years ago.
NT kernel from Windows NT is still in there.
For backward compatibility.
It's mostly unchanged.
Yeah. That's one thing. Apple is a little more aggressive about saying, this Apple OS will not run your old software. Get over it.
A little more aggressive.
I think it's 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
One thing,
every few years, they're just like, everything you know is wrong.
Yep.
Forget it.
One thing, though, I want to make clear from that previous caller, and I think you stand in the same way. I do not hate Windows. I love Windows. Like I said, in the beginning of the top of the last hour, I've used Windows since Windows 3.0. I love it. I am just tired and disappointed in the way they update, the security, and the way they treat us as owners of it, mm-hmm. as beta testers.
Right now, we were talking earlier about Kodak. Right now, Windows is Kodak. There's a bunch of people at the top who have not moved with the times, who don't understand the way things are done today.
And you invented something that everyone used 20 years ago.
20 years ago, and they think it's good enough then, it's good enough now. Yep. And the fact is, people are moving on. People don't want a month of insecurity before an update comes out. They don't want a 2 gigabyte registry. They don't want any of those things. And people are moving on to other things. And again, it's not hate, it's disappointment. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has the ability to be so much better. You know, it, and they're just not. And
well, that's just why,
not.
That's why I compared them to Kodak. They were great at their time. You know, they were the, as hot as, white on rice. But, just like Kodak didn't keep up with the digital times, Microsoft is doing the same.
Right.
And everybody.
And they can. That's just it. They have enough money. They have all the talent in the world.
Experience up the wazoo.
Experience. They could do anything they want to do, but it's cheaper to just go along like they've been going along. And that's the thing that I'm upset about. It's not hate. It's annoyance and disappointment.
That's what's driven me to go to Ubuntu.
But they have to keep changing things enough and adding enough new things to make people buy the new version.
Well, this 68 Ford Pinto you bought, hey, you know what? This year's model has fins.
Yeah.
It must be a better machine.
Goes and then, faster.
And then 5 years later, there's no more fins. Those are old-fashioned.
Those are old-fashioned. So we got rid of the chrome and we got rid of the fins. Well, for Pete's sake, let's take a look at the engine, shall we? That's just, that's the way it goes these days.
Just to put anything to rest, I don't want to, get emails and everything else. Oh, you just hate Windows. No, I don't. I'm just disappointed in Windows.
Yeah, we're just disappointed.
I am just tired of, it breaking my machine.
Yep.
Nothing ticks me off more than, because I don't turn my machines off. I turn the monitor on, and all of a sudden I'm seeing it. I'm at a login screen, which I know Windows did their magic again, or at least that's what they call it.
I wonder what won't work today.
Yeah, so then I had sit there and just figure out, try everything out, see if it still works. Like I say, with that one patch, they did away with a common driver. It was a generic driver. They just did away with it. And it worked for decades.
And a lot of programs required it.
Yeah. And they just did away. Well, we didn't.
They didn't need it anymore. So we just nobody needed it anymore.
Then why? If it's not taking up that much space and, it's working for everybody else and it's worked for decades, why take it out?
Right.
Just for doing it for the sake of doing it? No.
Right. 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 And that's just it. It's. They have the potential. There's a very, very old Peanuts cartoon with Linus standing there saying there's nothing, there's no heavier burden than a great potential. And yes, Microsoft has a great potential, and I personally don't think they're living up to it right now.
Mm-mm.
And that's what bothers me. They have the ability to do it.
Because there's millions, that's millions of computers out there with Windows on it.
Right. Look, the reason I moved to Linux to begin with was not because I hated Microsoft. It was because I was tired of building my machines all over again every month, finding something that wasn't working and having to fix it. Now, that certainly happened with Linux in the beginning because I didn't know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fair. But now that I do, I don't have issues with my machine, any of my machines, unless there's a hardware error. That's it. And nothing.
Well, that's what I ran into when I was first testing out Ubuntu. Was I was doing it on an old computer.
Right.
It was so old.
How old was it?
I couldn't even update the BIOS.
Yeah.
It was from 2012.
Yep.
And it still, there was no new BIOS, so I kept getting this error. So, yeah. Heck with this, if I want to learn right. So I got another Woot computer.
Oh, great stuff.
$300 computer that had 16 gig of memory, 512 gig SSD hard drive. And, oh, that's the other thing. The other machine didn't boot off of USB, so I had to burn CDs for all the different flavors of Linux that I was trying out. And talk about loading slow.
And that's what makes people scared of loading any Windows updates. So they don't, and now you're vulnerable to the latest ransomware and the latest 0 days. And, or you wake up one morning and suddenly it did install Windows 11 without your knowledge.
Right. Oh. And that's, I know a lot of people, I still personally say yay or nay to any update on my Windows machine. So just about every day I get a little thing that says, you want to update this? And I take a look at it and I'll say yes. But you can automate that now. And I know for a fact that anything that has gotten to me through the update has been vetted by a lot of people before it ever got to me. And I just don't have that confidence in Microsoft anymore.
Nope. That's where I'm at. I just like I say, I just got tired. And this has just been the past, year that, you know, I'm just getting tired of everything changing and breaking.
And you know, when Microsoft decided to get rid of their entire QA department, I knew that that was, things were just going to go downhill. And I get it. You know, everybody wants to make more money. Stockholders, shareholders need more money. That's the point of a business.
It's the fiduciary responsibility to make more money.
That's right. You just have to remember that in any publicly traded company, and Microsoft is one, you are not the customer. The shareholder is the customer. You are the product. And nobody cares about the product.
Yeah, they're not supposed to make you happy. They're supposed to make their shareholders money, which
that's
is
exactly right.
May not be the right target of a business these days.
Right. All right. We got about 2 minutes before the break. We can at least get the question of Rich from Irondequoit. What's up, Rich?
Hi, guys. I have a brand new HP laptop that has Microsoft Edge in it, and I don't like it. Can I remove that and put Google and Chrome back in it?
You can put Chrome in it, but you cannot remove Edge.
Yeah, I wouldn't remove Edge. Just take it off. First, go to Edge, download and install Chrome, and then just delete the icon for Edge off your desktop.
There are ways to disable Edge so that it doesn't launch itself.
Yeah.
A lot of times you try to click on Windows Update, it'll open Edge. And it probably should, because Microsoft's update works best with Microsoft's browser.
Right.
But the nice thing about Edge these days is it's based on Chromium. So it is almost Chrome.
Yeah.
It's hard for me to navigate and learn it and get around it. You can
install multiple browsers on your machine and even use them at the same time. So it's perfectly acceptable to download, install Chrome, and use that instead of Edge.
Especially if you use Google Gmail.
Yeah, the first time you launch Chrome, it's going to say, do you want to make me the default browser? And you can say yes.
So I would just type Chrome, Google Chrome in the browser and go from there.
Yep, download it, install it, and then it'll ask you, do you want me to make your default? Say yes, and then you can log into your Google account, and bam, you're all set to go.
Very good. Okay, now take your break. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. You just go to google.com, and you can download Chrome.
Chrome.google.com takes you straight there.
Chrome.google.com is better, yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, they do say that the number one use of Edge is to download Chrome. So that's kind of nice to know.
Microsoft has a tech note. Why can't I uninstall Microsoft Edge? Because it's the browser recommended by Microsoft.
That's right. And the heck with you. Yeah. You're not a shareholder. You don't get a say.
Yeah.
That's how that works. We all know that. So, again, that just brings us right around. Why is that not opening? Okay, anyway, we're going to take a quick break.
With your fists.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right. That's right. It's Soundbites. And it's right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you because with your generous support, we are solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. And V52, you're right. Remove the headphone jack to sell dongles. Yeah.
Courage.
What?
Courage.
Courage.
Huh? Phil. There's a Phil Schiller quote, and he's been laughed at ever since.
Yeah.
They had the courage.
They had the courage to remove the headphone jack. Yeah. On Monday, and you wonder, I don't hate Microsoft. I'm disappointed. On Monday, Microsoft warned that Windows devices with the newest supported processors are susceptible to data damage on Windows 11 and Windows Server 2022. Windows devices that support the new Vector Advanced Encryption Standard instruction set might be susceptible to data damage, they said. But they did not elaborate on what customers should expect if they're hit with this issue. Microsoft said the issue was addressed to prevent further data damage in preview and security releases issued on May 24th and June 14th, respectively. However, these Windows updates also come with a performance hit, since AES-based operations might be 2 times slower after installing them on infected systems. Scenarios impacted by the performance hit might include BitLocker, Transport Layer Security, TLS, used on dang near every website on the planet, specifically the load balancers, and disk throughput, especially for enterprise customers. The way you encrypt and decrypt your encrypted hard drive, how you talk to everybody on the web, and how fast your disk works. Other than that, it won't have any effect at all. We added new code paths to the Windows 11 original release and Windows Server 2022 versions of SimCrypt to take advantage of VAES, vectorized AES instructions, Microsoft said when describing the cause of the issue. Customers experienced performing degradation are advised to install the June 23rd preview update. That's right. You want to install the beta code of the beta code you're already running. Or the July 12th security update for their OS version as a workaround. Microsoft said these Windows updates will restore initial performance metrics. Might not be the best time to buy a new computer since this only happens on the newest processor. So give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
One of the guys in our office likes to run the public betas of the iPhone software, and he's always coming in and telling me about this new feature. And then the next day, well, this stopped working. I lost all my messages, and this stopped working.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You can be a beta tester.
Yep.
And
if you know you're
going
to do it, that's okay.
Good for you, but the reality is that if you're not interested in machines that die regularly, lose data all the time, and don't work like you expected to them, don't be a beta tester. Or don't run Windows, I guess is how that is. They could be so much better, so much better, and they just don't care. They aren't. They aren't. It's that easy. All right. Enough of that nonsense. Let's head back to the phones. Our next caller is Jim from Brighton, New York. Hi, Jim. What's up?
Hi. We've been talking a lot about the Chromebooks, and I'm wondering if you guys could put together something for us that would make it easier for us that are less able to give us, for instance, a link so we could make a USB installer for Chromebooks. In other words, on any machine, you just insert an 8-gigabyte or larger USB stick and download the installer. Then you can take it to any old machine, stick it in, and get the thing loaded.
Boy, do I have good news for you.
Yep, that's how it's designed to work.
there's a product called Chrome OS Flex. And it is specifically designed to do exactly what you're asking for right here. And so if you were to download Chrome OS Flex, you put it on a thumb drive, you stick it in any machine with 4 gig and 32 gig of hard drive space, or more, obviously, and you boot that machine from that thumb drive, and you can install Chrome OS Flex on that machine.
Okay. Well, that sounds excellent. Second question. I know you've talked about a list of machines that would accept Chromebook. They've been approved for use.
Yeah.
And is that available somewhere also?
Yes, that's on the web, and I think we have a link somewhere on our website. Steve is looking that up, but there is a, where is it? There is a, it's called the Certified Models List for Chrome OS, and there's a link on our website, Steve's.
Yep. From last week.
From last week, so if you scroll down, you might have to go to page 2, but it's there, and there's hundreds of models on that list. And I will say, of all the machines I put Chrome OS Flex on, none of them are on that list, but all of them work.
Yep.
They all have a quirk or two, but they all work.
Excellent. Next, last item, is it possible to use a Raspberry Pi and put on Chromebook and use it as a home PC?
Chrome OS Flex does not have a version for the Raspberry Pi yet.
Okay.
But they're working on one. Fridos? FYDEOS.
Yes, Fridos. Yep.
Okay. Now, when that happens, it would seem to me that that would be the cheapest home PC you could make.
Pretty much. Yeah, absolutely. Because you can get obviously you would want a Raspberry Pi 4B.
That's the more expensive one, right?
Right. Which is, you know, more expensive, they say that's $100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Exactly. So yes, you would want a 4B or a 400. And you can, you can't do it now because the Raspberry Pi uses a different processor set.
I just found a, step-by-step instructions on linuxhint.com.
On how to do it?
To install Chrome OS on a Raspberry Pi 4.
Yeah. Yeah, but FIDOS, FYDEOS, yeah.
Yeah, FIDE, that was the other FIDE, one, yeah.
FIDO, whatever it is. In general, you can certainly just run the Raspberry Pi OS that comes with it, and it comes with a web browser. You can download the Chromium browser for that, which is Chrome, the Chrome OS browser. And you can then just use it in the browser mode, just like you would use a Chromebook. I mean, one of my Raspberry Pis is literally just that. I only use it to do things out on the web through the browser. It's a $100. I paid $125 because I got
the
higher end.
Cadillac.
Yeah, I got the SD card for it. And I got 8 gig, so but you can run that easily. And I have a Raspberry Pi 400 that I use really as a full blown desktop. But 90% of what I do on the web. So you could use any Raspberry Pi just with the browser as if it were a Chromebook.
Well, that's the thing, though. If he even just puts Xubuntu on it.
Uses Raspberry Pi, because all he's doing is the browser.
Oh, and then it's right there.
It's right there, and you don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
And you can also run any of the standard Linux programs. You can't yet run Android apps easily on a Raspberry Pi, but you can certainly do anything you would normally do in a browser, and you can run any Linux program. So that's two out of three things that a Chromebook does.
Thank you very much, fellas.
Thanks.
Appreciate the show today.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I have to admit my loyalties are torn. I've been a Linux guy for almost 30 years now. But I have discovered that I spend a lot of my day on a Chromebook and a lot of my day on a Raspberry Pi because there are things that are easy enough to do on those things. I do almost all the back-end automated stuff that I do on my websites through my Raspberry Pi.
What about some Phoenix?
I wrote a bunch of Python code that does things in the background, and I just leave a Raspberry Pi running doing those all day, and I just check the logs that I create. So, it's easy, it's fast, it's clean, and it works every day. But any of those operating systems are good. So that's always nice to see. All right, let's go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Jerry all the way in Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey, guys. Thank you very much. So I was helping this friend clear out the basement a little bit, and we came across a Dell Inspiron, one of the itty-bitty ones that still runs an Atom processor. And we're charging the battery on it, but I'm just curious if there are any versions of Linux or of FlexOS that will run on the Atom processor.
Yes, I think that Linux will run fine on an Atom processor. Oh, I'm just looking. I've run it on an Atom processor machine.
Puppy Linux, Lubuntu, Mint.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's a bunch of versions that will run on that. So, yeah, go for it. Go for it. That's a nice little machine. Yeah, I would say for it.
And I'll post a link.
We'll post a link on the website.
Can you guys post a link on your website so that other folks can follow it?
Yep. Steve is doing it as we speak.
Hey, thank you very much. Have a good afternoon. Now.
Have a good time in Arizona. Stay cool.
We've tried. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yep, bye-bye.
Boy, our signal's getting out.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we like to hear. And hi to everybody in Arizona. Yep. Hope everything is lovely out there.
I got family out there now.
So do I.
Yep. And, so do Scottsdale.
I. That's where mine is.
Yep. Well, that's where Sandy's sisters live.
Yeah, that's where my sister-in-law Scottsdale. Lives.
Right. You know, it's a suburb of Phoenix.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, you can run not Raspberry Pi. Linux on all kinds of processors. There's a group of people porting Linux to the M2 processor now.
Yep.
For the people who just can't run that,
they want to run it on the fastest computer you can.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And it's all about the hardware. So yeah, there's a. It's easy enough. It's easy enough to do. And you can, it's easy enough to do. It's easy enough to do for a programmer. They're in the midst of doing that. So,
well, like you said, even the Raspberry Pi, though, when you get that, it already comes by default when you get the SD card with it. It already comes preloaded with Raspbian on it.
Right.
So that when you boot it up, folks, it will automatically install the Raspberry Pi operating system on it. So you're up and running, and then you can then turn around and add a hard drive for more storage and that. But most of them now come with 32 gig or bigger SD cards.
Yeah, the one I'm ordering now is 128 gig, which is too little for what I want to store on it because it's going to be a backup machine. But I've got, there are terabyte drives that aren't that expensive right now. Mm-hmm. And, oh, by the way, I've got a bunch of terabyte drives I pulled out of other machines, which I'll just pull one of those and via USB.
That's
on
what
USB 3, it's fast enough.
Yeah, I got it the same thing. I got the adapter that goes from the hard drive to a USB port. And, yeah, I've got a bunch of laptop hard drives.
Yep. I've got those, and I've got regular size,
yeah.
And you can buy what I've got for one of my Raspberry Pis right now is an enclosure that holds a full-sized hard drive, terabyte hard drive. It's only 7,200 RPM, but who cares?
Mm-hmm.
It's a backup device. I say, go back it up to there and leave me alone, and I don't have to think about it anymore. Let it take an extra second. And so it sits there. The Raspberry Pi sits on top of it. And it's a little unit that just sits on a shelf and hums along all day long.
Did you see that? The one guy that I learned, you know, Raspberry Pi stuff, he has that one stand that has shelves.
Yeah.
And on the top shelf is the Raspberry Pi, and then below that he's got all his other hard drives.
Yep, yep. There's a bunch of people who do it. Jeff Geerling is another one who does that stuff. It's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool stuff. Slide things in and out very easily.
Yep.
I just wind up getting the little enclosures for the, the laptop drives.
And Altoid tins.
Yeah, basically, you can put the whole thing in an Altoid tin.
Yeah.
The Raspberry Pi is, these days, is an inexpensive but pretty powerful machine. And you can do, and the beauty of it is...
And they're fast.
Is mm-hmm. it's fast, it's easy, it's inexpensive.
It's part of the new maker. Movement.
Sure. Why not?
So people are back to tinkering and making things anymore. 3D printers, and you get a Raspberry Pi, and you can make a little robot that wanders around your house with a camera.
That's right. Probably not something.
Well, the other thing too is you don't have to worry about the spyware, the malware, and the viruses.
Right.
I mean, for the most part, I won't say that you don't. It's totally free, but it's less likely. I mean, the hackers are going after the Microsoft Office or Microsoft systems and the Mac.
Right.
Because those, especially Windows, because that has so many holes in it, Swiss cheese can't even compete.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what. I had a friend of mine called me up the other day and said, you know that website you helped me build? I said, yeah. She said, it crashed. It's gone. It's completely gone. I said, no, it isn't. She said, you got backups? She said, I said, well, I do, because I set it up for her. So one of the things I did
is back up.
I just backed it up to that terabyte hard drive on my Raspberry Pi. Every morning at 4 a.m., it goes in and backs everything up. So I just said, I've got your database. I've got all your
code. But it's going to cost you.
That's right. That's exactly right. But I've been backing it up for 3-4 months now. So no worries. Here you go.
How'd she, machine just die or how'd she lose
it? I don't know. It was something to do with her host. I actually moved her to my host, Bluehost. Or just the people she was with were, I don't know who they were, but I don't care. The point is, I said, I got everything for you. It's all here. And because I'm just, once I created the backup, I don't think about it anymore. That Raspberry Pi runs every single day. And never fails.
One other thing that this Woot box that I got, it's a Dell computer.
Yeah.
That when I was installing Xubuntu,
mm-hmm.
it was weird. I did all the updates. So it says, all right, I need to restart. I said, all right, go ahead. Boom, it restarts. And all of a sudden I get this flash screen. We're updating your BIOS.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It turned around and says, don't touch the machine. Don't turn it off.
Yep.
We're in the middle of update. It updated the BIOS automatically for me. So it's got the latest and greatest. And then once it was done, it says, all right, we're going to go ahead and start your machine. Boom. And it did it.
Yep. So, I'll tell you what. I'll say it again. Woot. WOOT.com. They have, it used to be one day, one deal. Now they're owned by Amazon, so it's a lot of deals every day. And every once in a while, I've noticed that some of the deals are not deals per se.
You got to be shopper-wise.
But every day they have computer deals. Every day they have shirt, T-shirt deals.
Today there's 3,065 deals.
There you go.
On all deals on their homepage.
Right, right, right. But they have, you know, you can get headphones and all of that, yada, yada. But they also have a computer section today. It's a bunch of desktops, Dell desktops. There they are, starting from going from $99.99, $100 to $11.50.
Yeah, I got mine for this nice little desktop unit. It's a pizza half tower.
Yeah.
You know, for $300.
Yeah.
And like I said, it came with 16 gig of memory and 512 gig SSD hard drive. And it is fast.
Yeah.
But it came preloaded with Windows 10. Yeah, no, it never even got to see that.
Right.
Because I put in the USB drive, had it boot from there. Boom, flashed it with the Ubuntu, and off and running and setting things up.
Yep. Here's an i7 processor, 3 gigahertz.
Oh, I got an i5.
Yeah. 16 gig of RAM, 512 gig of SSD, Wi-Fi 6, Win10 Home, $585. Cheese and crackers. And generally, they're factory reconditioned.
Yeah.
Comes with a warranty, yada, yada, yada. So there's, you know.
Some of them are sneaky. I just found a MacBook Air that's listed at 81% off because it's a 7-year-old used model.
Yes.
So they're going the original list price versus what they're selling it for now. It's 81% off
in
7 years. 10% a year. Okay.
like I said, you got to have your smarts.
Yep. Yeah, you got to know what you're getting, you know. And it's not all deals are deals.
Right, right. But if you find a good deal, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, you get a 90-day warranty with a lot of these things, and you can buy an extra protection plan.
Yeah, because mine, I ordered it on Saturday. Was it Saturday? Yeah, and I got it yesterday.
Oh, yeah, and if you're a Prime customer,
yeah.
Many times you get free shipping.
Yeah, I did.
So I do like Woot. I buy much of my stuff from Woot. Here's a 17-inch Intel laptop for $470. I mean, come on. Logitech mouse, Bluetooth mouse for $20. There's some good deals and some fair deals.
Yep.
But there's a lot of stuff. But, yeah, if you're interested in playing around with a new operating system, what are we looking at on YouTube? What's going on with YouTube? Something weird, YouTube?
It's not at my end.
Oh, it must be me then.
Let me see.
Let me redo that. Anyway, the point, yeah, there is, now it's back. I don't know where it went. But the point is, if you're looking for an inexpensive machine that you can play with, maybe learn a new operating system, maybe have a backup server,
lost internet for a moment.
Yeah, maybe do something, whatever, whatever, whatever. But the point is, Raspberry Pi is an inexpensive, and they're starting to come around again. They're starting to come back. I might say that, you know, maybe wait till October before you're going to really find more deals. But our hope is that with this new CHIPS Act, see how I brought it around? With this new CHIPS Act, we'll start seeing that. Although, it takes a year or two to build a plant, let's be honest. All right, we're done for another week. That music tells us we are finished. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense. But we want to thank everybody who called in. We also want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray. I'm Nick Franchese. I don't know who the we is that are thanking you guys, but it's mostly just me, like I'm in charge or something. I don't know. It's just the way you say things on radio. Anyway, we're done for another week. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Sound Bites, right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that we continue to be member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?